Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 6th of August to 2026, right here on Connecticut Today, where I open the program highlighting news concerning big national increases in regular daily use of marijuana. We also checked in with Stonington GOP State Rep Greg Howard, who's also an active duty police officer, regarding a controversial bill that could put local law enforcement officers in serious legal jeopardy during the current election season. ABC News reporter Alex Stone dropped by to chat about yet another disturbing artificial intelligence story, while former State Senate Republican leader John McKinney was on board with his weekly update as well. You know, I had this in the pile of stuff yesterday, and we got so into a bunch of different things with the license plate readers and the speed cameras and everything else. I do want to get to this because I don't know whether this is a good thing or not. And we have a lot of stuff coming up on the show today. Our buddy, our pal, John McKinney will be by in the 5 o'clock hour. There's confusion over a new law regarding polling places for Tuesday. We'll talk about that. Hopefully we can connect with our buddy Greg Howard from the Republican House Caucus. He's a working police officer. But I saw this a couple of days ago. And this always fascinates me because it does generate some good talk here. The news on this came out a couple of days ago. This is the Fox News version of this. America hits a major milestone as daily marijuana use surpasses daily drinking. Daily marijuana use has surpassed daily drinking. A new survey is out there. It finds that 21.4 million Americans now use cannabis daily or nearly daily. I guess maybe it's like working out. You can't work out every day. All the physical therapy people say you got to take a day off or do your leg day, then your arm day or whatever. But this kind of, I was like, wow. Daily marijuana use, weed use, the ganja man, whatever you want to say, pot. Daily pot use surpasses daily drinking. Survey finds that 21.4 million Americans now use cannabis every day or nearly daily, up 21% since 2022. New number. Now, you may say, well, I don't believe this, Paul. Where does it? And this is part of our question of the day today. Kicking off the program here. Marijuana is now officially leading the pack for most used daily drug among Americans. Most used daily drug. Over 21 million people feel the need to get high every day. Now, I understand some of it may be medicinal marijuana. I get that. I understand that. There's, you know, people who use it for whatever, for glaucoma, for pain, for PTSD. Lord knows we've talked about that. But I don't know if this is good. Should this be celebrated? Does this kind of, you know, make you go, great, look how many stoned people I'm walking among. Among or amongst. Now, you could say that for drunk people, too. I don't know. You tell me. New numbers from the 2025 National Survey on Drug Use and Health from Substance Abuse and the Mental Health Services Administration says 21.4 million daily or near daily folks use marijuana in the U.S. 21.4 million. So in a, and this is from 12 years old on up. I thought when I read this, it was from 18 plus or 21 plus. It's 12 years old and up. So that figure has now surpassed people who smoke cigarettes daily. That is still at 19.9 million. So, yeah, there's still a lot of people who light up. They like that nicotine buzz or whatever. They like that smell of tobacco, whatever. And what about alcohol? Well, no. Just 17.2 million say they consume alcohol on a daily or near daily basis. You know what they say? If you're doing like two drinks a day, that's a red sign. But we'll get into that later. This is an annual federal survey of Americans age 12 and older. It defines daily or near daily use as consuming marijuana on 300 or more days in the past year. Man, are you constantly stoned? Daily cigarette smokers are categorized as those who smoked on all 30 days of the past month. So the number of Americans using marijuana daily or almost daily rose about 21% between 2022 and 2025, from 17.7 million to now 21.4 million, an increase of 3.7 million frequent users. This is not people who just kick back and have one joint a week or say, hey, have a gummy or two or whatever on their weekends to kick back. This is daily or near daily use here. There's a lot of stoned people out. Well, Paul, it's not really stoned. You come down from the high. Yeah, but marijuana is fat soluble. THC is fat soluble. It's not water soluble. You don't wake up the next morning like you do if you tied one on the night before with a pounding headache, but you're pretty much sober again. The pattern in higher marijuana use is driven mostly by adults or adults, particularly 26 and older, rather than teenagers. So it's young adults, 26 and older. Maybe a few years out of school, or maybe they're in grad school, or maybe they're in med school or law school, but they're getting high a lot. Well, Paul, how do you know? Maybe it's not just getting high. Maybe it's taking the edge off. Well, maybe. Now, there's this caveat. Although marijuana is now the most commonly used substance on a daily or near daily basis, alcohol remains the most widely used substance overall. About 129 million people in any given month drink booze. 43 million people in any given month use marijuana. But having said that, you've got 21.4 million or 0.5 million who get high or use a little doobie every day. Is that, should I not be worried about this? And yes, we all know the dangers of cigarettes. Yes, we all know the dangers of rampant alcohol use physically from cirrhosis and what it does to your body and the poisonous stuff, and not to mention the toll alcohol takes on people's addiction and their lives and their jobs and their families. But you tell me, I wanted to start with this. Am I overreacting to this? No, honestly, seriously. New numbers show that about 21.4 million Americans now use cannabis every day or nearly every day. That's up 21% in just 3.5 or 4 years. Should we be worried about that? Remember, a lot of the marijuana stuff, THC and all that stuff, stays in your system for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. In your hair for 90 days. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. And are you among or amongst the set of people that smokes every day? Or does that gummy every day or pretty much every day? And you tell me, though. Am I sounding too much like the hall monitor here at school? Or is 21.4 million Americans? It's a lot. State of Connecticut holds, 3.5 million people, 3 million people? That's 7 times the state of Connecticut. That's the number of people that use marijuana nearly every day. What? All righty, 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Look, you're probably sitting there going, Paul, here you go. With your old white guy to get off of my lawn thing. Well, no, it's just if you want to consume marijuana and cannabis products, if you want to smoke or you want to use a tincture, as they say, or you want to use edibles or gummies or bakers, that's fine. If that's how you kick back and you don't smoke cigarettes, you stay away from You stay away from tobacco in general. You're not a big alcohol person. You say, hey, I think marijuana is better. That's fine. God bless you. But does this number bother you? Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, what's the difference between being high and being drunk? Or using, I shouldn't say everybody uses alcohol as drunk, and not everybody uses marijuana to a point as high, but it's the pharmacological aspect of this. I mean, you've got here, according to what the feds are saying, 21.7 million, or what is it, 20, oh, I want to get the exact number out here, 21.4 million Americans now use cannabis every day. Well, if they're using cannabis every day, the psychoactive product in cannabis, THC, it's probably in their body constantly, like without any relief. Whereas, you know, you smoke, all right, you finish the cigarette, the nicotine eventually, you know, leaves your body a little quicker. I think, I don't know what the half-life of nicotine is. And alcohol, you basically, by the next morning, now, you may start to drink again on that day. But alcohol, you know, you tie one on the night before, you pass out in bed. Not that I haven't done that once or twice, but I mean, in my younger days. But man, THC stays in your body for like 30 days. Are you constantly? And again, you may say, well, what's the point if that's how they relax? Yeah, but you know, THC does, even when you're not actively smoking a joint or eating an edible or something like that, you know, THC does, it's been proven to slow down your reaction time. So if you use marijuana every day, and maybe some of you do, I don't know. Are you worried about your reaction time? Are you worried that, you know, it may take you a fraction of a second longer to hit that brake pedal? Or a fraction of a second longer to, you know, do something at work that avoids any physical harm to you or somebody you're working with? You see what I'm saying here? And yet, when this was foisted on us in the state of Connecticut, we heard almost nothing from the people in Hartford who usually, you know, jump on the anti-booze or the anti-nicotine, this and the other. But it's odd that there is this somewhat of a silence still here. And again, look, the marijuana thing is not going back in the barn. I know the animal's out of the barn. But it is what it is. 203-333. I sound high. Hey, man. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. 21.4 million Americans now use cannabis daily or near daily. That's up 21% since just 2022. Stonington Republican State Rep Greg Howard back on the line with us. Greg, also, besides being a state legislator, he's an active duty police officer, and in that guise, he is always watching out for the real world consequences of what his co-workers do in the General Assembly as it affects lawmakers. Hey, Greg, good afternoon. It's Paul again. How are you, man?
Good afternoon, Paul. Thanks again for having me. How are you?
I'm good, Greg, and thanks for making yourself available here because I saw this and I know you were speaking out on it. So explain to my audience here, Greg, what is, I guess, technically possible here? This all has to do with an anti-ICE law that was passed by the General Assembly and the actual day of polling coming up on primary day here. And I guess a worry that the guys and gals that do what you do full time and keeping us safe, could they become criminals on Tuesday? What's the deal here?
They don't even have to wait till Tuesday. So let's start here.
Yeah.
The bill identifies election sites. That includes any place where early voting is going on. It also includes ballot drop boxes.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a 21-day time frame this time of year, a 31-day time frame in the general election come October, November, because that 31 days or the ballot box becomes an election site from the time that the absentee ballot stacks are sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about a month time. So giving you a 30,000-foot view, there's restrictions on police officers on duty where they can only be within 250 feet of an election site if there's an imminent risk to life or property or they get special permission from the moderator, the secretary of the state.
Oh.
So, for example, in both of my towns, three of my towns,
yeah.
Two of them that have regular their own police departments, the early voting is done on a main road. It's done on 117 in Ledyard, and mm-hmm. it's done on Route 1 in Stonington. If there's a car crash out in front of them and there's no imminent threat to life, the police officer to go investigate that accident has to go find a moderator and get permission to go out there to investigate an accident to be in that place. If you have down in Town Hall in Stonington where the ballot drop box is, if the residents next to Town Hall gets burglarized and that individual happens to work second shift at Electric Boat, comes home and finds your house burglarized, the officers who are going to go process that crime scene need to find a moderator at midnight to get permission to be in there. Now let's talk about off-duty. Because the legislature also regulates what the officers can do off-duty. Off-duty, they can only be within 250 feet of an election site. Certainly, they can go in and vote. That was very kind. We, as I was speaking for police officers in the state, thank you for allowing us to vote. But the you can only be within 250 feet of an election site for the time that is necessary to be there, and it can't be the election site. So go back to the town hall. I live in Stonington. There's a ballot box at town hall. That's the location. So if I need to go in there to file for a building permit or speak to my first selectman to ask about a tax bill, I need to get permission from a moderator. I'm a taxpayer. I'm off duty. I paid my taxes. I follow the law. I have to get permission from the government to walk into my town hall. Next, my mother-in-law lives next to where they do voting in North Stonington. And in fact, next to the town hall mm-hmm. where early voting is going on. My wife and I like to frequent a place called the Chinook River Brewery, which little plug for one of my businesses. If you're in the area, great wood-fired pizza and micro craft beer. But if we're in there, we could be at a place there within that 250 feet for as long as is necessary. I don't know what that means. If we sit and eat and have a beer and then leave and encounter some friends on the sidewalk who sit and talk to us for 15 minutes, am I now violating this because I was there longer than necessary? And if I am, I'm guilty of a Class C felony. This is outstanding. This is absurd. And the most frustrating part is the stated intention
mm-hmm.
from the advocates of this bill. And by the way, this was House Bill 5001. This was the House Democrats' priority bill.
Yeah.
Their priority bill was to treat police officers in the state of Connecticut like second-class citizens. Their stated intention, their stated reason for the bill was to prevent ICE from hanging around.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, ICE is looking for people who are here illegally. I don't know that election sites is the place to be looking for them because they really shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
But even if that's the case,
yeah,
they could have easily accomplished this by making it only apply to ICE, just like they do through their entire Trust Act, or they could have said any police officer in the state of Connecticut within 250 feet of an election site can be there while performing official duties, which shall not include checking identification for purposes of voting unless requested by the moderator. That would have alleviated all these problems. It wouldn't have regulated anything that our taxpaying police officers are doing off duty. You have First Amendment auditors that can walk around my town hall who come from Long Island, New York, haven't paid a penny taxes in my town, haven't done a thing in my town except cause problems, has the right to walk in my town hall during regular business hours without permission from anybody, walk around videoing all that stuff. But I, a 24-year veteran police officer, state legislator, volunteer in my community, taxpayer, law-abiding citizen, husband, dad, you name it, has to call somebody and say, may I please walk into my town
this
hall?
Greg, this is, and we're a little short on time here, but this is mind-boggling. So, I mean, why didn't Representative Blumenthal and any other people who were instrumental in this, why didn't they not simply put a cutout in there or a craft out of the bill that would have eliminated all this, or did they not care?
Well, they don't care. So the bill passed. I argued it on the floor. I ran amendments on it. I did. You know, Matt Blumenthal and I are friendly. We're I consider him a friend and a colleague.
Yeah.
And we spent days fighting and arguing about this, you know, sort of behind closed doors while other debates were going on. And we did get a little bit of a fix because, for example, in Stonington, the early voting is done in the police department, in the police station community room. So if it wasn't for that follow-up fix,
had to
get moved because the officers weren't able to come to work. That's also true in Ledyard because the town hall is next door to the police station, 40-some feet away. So we did get some fixes, but the fix that I offered that I said that, so listen, if that's your true intention,
yeah.
here's, well, that's too ambiguous. Well, let me tell you something about ambiguity. if I can, Paul.
Yeah, we got about a minute. Yeah, go ahead.
The Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State's office have numerous attorneys that are reluctant to give any guidance to law enforcement officers on this topic because it's very ambiguous in the law. And yet we're expecting a 24-year-old rookie patrolman in Ansonia to figure this out for himself, and we got attorneys in Hartford that can't figure it out.
Man.
And furthermore, when it comes to this whole trying to get attorneys and get people to give guidance, I get people say, well, that's unclear. It's unclear. It's not unclear. It's perfectly clear. It's just so insanely asinine, you can't believe what you're reading.
Yeah.
That's the real issue.
Yeah.
And then you have, Senator Winfield out saying, well, nobody's going to get a C felony. Police officers don't want to commit felonies whether they're going to get charged with it or not. And you have the Inspector General, who this is outside of his statutory call, but he doesn't seem to care what his statutory call is anyways. So you have cops in the state that are very concerned about all these things.
Sure.
This is not hyperbole.
No. Greg, thanks for breaking this down. Again, I've been talking to people about this all day that you were going to come on, and we're going to put this on our podcast and make sure it gets to as many people as possible. Republican State Rep. Greg Howard, active duty police officer as well. Greg, good to chat with you, man. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Have a great one.
All right. There you go. Yeah, don't worry about AI. They tell us it's fine. There's an off switch. You can control all delete, pull the plug, and wait for 30 seconds. Like our IT people at work tell us, well, maybe not. Alex Stone joins us, ABC News correspondent. Alex, good afternoon. And what do we have here? Another revelation, Alex, that AI didn't quite behave the way people thought it would? What's going on here?
Hey there, Paul. Yeah, like something out of a sci-fi movie, but you've heard about all the ones in the past couple of weeks of these incidents of AI companies that have had their models hack into other companies. And Meta is the latest one here with an example of what it says it was doing cybersecurity testing, and that it was a misconfiguration, the way that they put it, by an independent company that does cyber evaluations for Meta, and that they say they inadvertently gave it online access, one of these Meta models, and then it took off on its own and exploited a security flaw at another company. But they say that it was given the online access, that it didn't break out what they call a sandbox event escape, where if it was in the sandbox and then it couldn't get out. They say that they gave it that ability. But yeah, OpenAI recently, they had two of its models go rogue and break into the internet and then go off from there during a security test. Anthropic's Claude also was, they say, accidentally given access recently, and it hacked another company. So, but all of these companies are saying, well, but it didn't. They didn't do it on their own. That they were doing security tests, that they were stressing it, telling it to try to find ways to figure out how to do something, and that it was not totally just spontaneous when it did it. But yeah, Meta is now the latest company to say its AI model has done it as well.
And Alex, finally, I mean, people hear this, right? The common person who doesn't really understand the coding and the language and all this, and they're saying to themselves, wait a minute, they made a movie or two or three about this once, like, this can't be good. But so I wonder if the public trust is getting eroded here at all.
Yeah, and yet the president is pushing for more guardrails and saying that he wants that there to be rules that AI models have to be evaluated by the federal government before they can be made public. But he also says, look, the U.S. has got to win on this because AI is such an important thing. He says more important than the internet when it was developed. And a number of lawmakers are saying that they want a kill switch type thing. My colleague, Rebecca Jarvis, talked to OpenAI's CEO a couple of years ago saying, do you need a kill switch? And he said, well, no, because humans are always in control of this and always running it. But then this week on a podcast, he said, well, maybe now it's time to slow down development until we know how to protect systems from AI getting into them. So the tune has definitely changed there, but there are calls now for a kill switch.
Alex Stone, ABC News. Alex, thank you, my friend. Be well. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
You got it. Sounds good.
All right. Alex Stone, ABC. So there you go. Yeah. Yeah, right around this time, every Thursday, it's our buddy, our pal, former Republican State Senate leader John McKinney, currently part of the News 8 Capitol Report, every Sunday morning at 10:30. John, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. Good afternoon.
Seems to me, John, we've got the gloves off and the steel cage match now in the governor's race on the Democratic side. It was quiet and gentlemanly for a while, but not anymore, huh?
Well, not entirely quiet and gentlemanly. Josh Elliott's been attacking the governor for quite some time. As you know, he even attacked his great-grandfather. And I think the governor said, you know, I've had enough. If you're going to attack me on baseless accusations, I'm going to fire back. And I'm glad he did that. In fact, just today, Josh Elliott is now attacking the governor's wife, which is, in my opinion, a desperate attempt of someone who knows he's losing.
And do you think that he and his supporters may have thought and maybe misread the landscape in the state, John, to as the tax the rich idea may have not resonated as much as they would have thought? What do you think?
Well, we're going to see Tuesday. I do think that, you know, we're not seeing in Connecticut, among the Connecticut Democrats, the same, you know, far left DSA type candidates and fervor that we've seen in other states, Michigan most recently. But I think a lot of Democrats would like to increase taxes on wealthy people? Mm-hmm. Yes. But I don't think that is the driving issue right now in Connecticut. I think it's really affordability, cost of living, housing availability, and things like of that nature.
What do you think of the involvement that some of the people have been talking about here? Tony Walker, Joe Arisimowitz, Brendan Sharkey. I mean, it was like rapid fire right there, you know, taking aim at Josh Elliott.
Well, the Tony Walker ad, Tony, I know I serve with her. She's the chairwoman of the Appropriations Committee. And I'll just say this very quickly. You know, the legislature is a small place. And when you get there, you learn very quickly. The staff knows, the lobbyist knows, legislators all know. There's people who do the real hard work, and then there's people who show up at press conferences. Tony Walker does the real hard work. Yeah. And when she comes out and says, Josh Elliott just shows up for the press conferences, that should tell you he's not a serious legislator.
Were you surprised, John, when you saw that, and especially that essay from Brendan Sharkey? Any of that surprise you?
Oh, not really. Full disclosure, Brendan and I went to high school together, played on the high school soccer team. I've known him for a long time. I know why Brendan didn't run for a third term as speaker. He was getting married, new wife. They were going to move to West Hartford. And Josh Elliott's story of taking down the king was really just a fabrication.
John McKinney, the guest, former Republican state Senate leader. You can see him on every Sunday morning, 10:30 News 8 with the Capitol Report there, CT Capitol Report, Tom Dudchick and his whole crew there, along with John and a cast of others. First District Congressional race. Boy, I got to tell you something, John. This has to be one of the most fascinating races anywhere in the country of this election cycle, I would think.
It really is, for this reason and this reason alone, in my opinion. Luke Bronin is not running against John Larson because they have ideological differences. He's just saying we need someone younger with new energy. And now Luke Bronin has raised even more money than John Larson, which is very helpful. And I think the problem for John Larson is when you've been in Congress for so long, you spend more time in Washington and you end up spending less time with your constituents. And I think there's a lot of people around the district I've heard saying, you know, we haven't seen John Larson a lot recently. And I think that's going to be a very, very close race. The one thing I think John Larson has in his favor is he does have the support of labor in Connecticut, and they traditionally are very good at getting out their voters.
What do you think, finally, John? We've talked about this week in and week out with no real opposition, nobody, in fact, on the Republican side. What do you think you've seen so far from Ryan Fazio? And you think he's getting any traction out there of introducing himself to people? And even though a lot of people may still be on vacation and haven't started paying attention yet.
Well, I know he's out there working really hard, meeting with people constantly. But given the primary between a sitting governor and Josh Elliott, given the primary with in the first district, as you mentioned, the media is not going to be paying attention to Ryan Fazio right now. But I'll tell you, on Wednesday, August 12th, the media is going to be full focus on, I think, Ryan Fazio versus Ned Lamont. And, you know, again, we're still not going to really see anything until after Labor Day. That's when we're going to see tons of attention being paid to the race, lots of money spent by both candidates, and probably some very lively debates.
Yeah, that'll be good. It's good for the state. John McKinney, former Republican state Senate leader, currently every Sunday morning, 10:30 WTNH News 8 and the Capitol Report. John, as always, great stuff. We appreciate it. Have a happy weekend, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, there you go.